Hi, my name's Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on a very important and frankly very cool topic, how to motivate the human mind. In many cases, how you say what you say is just as or more important than what you said. And I'm so excited to have Ron Brown here to share his insights about neurolinguistics and the power of the human mind. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Microbuilt. You'll get the chance to hear more about them in a minute. I wanted to take a quick second and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the armed industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the armed industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit about today's speaker. Ron Brown has more than 45 years of experience in the field of locating and recovering lost and missing people and assets. He is internationally recognized as one of the leaders in the tracing and recovery industry and spends much of his time acting as an instructor for various credit and collection entities. Having received the ACA International Fred Kirshner Instructor Achievement Award for instructing 250 ACA seminars, he was also three times selected by ACA International as the ACA Certified Instructor of the Year. Nationally recognized as one of the key instructors of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, and HIPAA, Ron has written many published articles on these ever-changing federal laws and continues to conduct seminars like this one related to these statutes. At this point, I'd also like to take a minute and talk about our sponsor, Microbuilt. For more than 35 years, Microbuilt has been helping businesses assess and manage risk. They were a pioneer in the now exploding alternative credit data space, and as such have refined their products and services to deliver true business value. Over the years, Microbuilt has invested heavily in acquiring best-in-class data. They built sophisticated systems for keeping their data fresh and accurate, and powerful predictive models for making decisions around lending, leasing, collections, and risk management. With Microbuilt, you can customize the products you need and how much you want to spend, and all of their products are provided through a single, simple access portal. Whether you're working in originations or debt collection, screening a potential hire or tenant, planning for growth, or keeping up with regulatory requirements, Microbuilt can be your partner, providing the insights and information you need to protect your business, grow your bottom line, and keep your company running smoothly. For more information, please contact Microbuilt at 800-884-4747 or visit microbuilt.com, and that's microbuilt spelled microbuilt.com. The format for today's webinar will be a presentation from Ron. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them when the presentation is concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With that, let me hand it over to Ron Brown to begin his presentation. Ron?
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be with you today and to bring this program to you. We're going to be talking about neurolinguistic programming, which is ways to motivate the human mind. Today's session goes basically towards in the skip tracing area. There is a second section to this that has to do with the collections, but today we'll talk about the way we're going to use neurolinguistics to track people, to get informants to give us information. And we're going to learn five of the most powerful words in the English language, and not just the words, but why they are so powerful. I have found going through life that it's not the people that know how as much as it's the people that know why that really proceed in life. Now, on the next slide, what you're going to see is a little disclaimer here. I am not an attorney. I'm not giving anyone legal advice. This information is not intended to be legal advice. If you need legal advice, go to your attorney. Thank goodness I'm not one. So let's look at the next slide and get started. NLP, you know, this actually was started many, many years ago, but it really came to surface in the late 60s and the early 70s. Two gentlemen, Richard Bandler and John Grinder, in the early 70s, started looking at neurolinguistics. It's an approach to communication. connection between the brain processes, which is the neuro, and language, the linguistics, and how you can use different language to change the behavioral patterns of the brain. You know, we all agree that perception is reality. The way we perceive things, you know, we've always heard nothing is good, nothing is bad. It's the way we perceive it. You know, sometimes you look at a painting or a picture and you say, gee, that is just beautiful. And somebody else comes along and says, you know, I don't see what you see in that. We see this example daily. We see people that you know, we think, you know, what is that beautiful woman doing with that guy? Or what is that guy doing with that woman? And things like that. Perception is reality. Now, if we all agree that perception is reality, the scary part of that is reality can be changed by changing perception. When we're talking to people in the collection industry and they don't want to pay, they haven't paid. Basically, the reality to them is they don't have to pay, they're not going to pay. But we persuade them to move to another point where they do pay. We change their perception. We change the reality. A lot of times people think they can't pay. Or in this case, they're not going to give you information. They're not going to tell you what you want to know. This is where the government came in and got really involved with neurolinguistic programming, because what they decided was we can use it in interrogation techniques. And when I worked for the government, it's the first time I ever heard of neurolinguistics, but it moves into this industry very good. It's basically a form of mind manipulation, if you look at it. We're going to learn how to take people and change their behavior. Behavior can be modified through NLP. You know, NLP has a lot of uses. Five of the major things that I see NLP used for is, number one, establishing rapport. You know, we do this by mirroring. We do it by pacing. These are two terms that we use in interrogation techniques and getting people to give you information. Mirroring is using the same movements as the other person, sitting the same way in a chair. This is where it's visual. Pacing is the same thing that you do telephonically. Listen to their voice. Listen to their rate of speech. Listen to the words they use. And then you do the same thing. You pace with them. We can use NLP to gain information. We can use it in persuasion and negotiation. We can use it in management and in teaching, in team building and public speaking. These are things that we can use it for. Today, we're going to talk about using it in collections. Now, neurolinguistics. Let's look at the slide. The proper understanding and the use of neurolinguistics programming can aid the professional collector and tracer to achieve greater recovery percentages, de-escalate confrontations, and reduce job stress. And if you've been in this business very long, you realize it's stressful. You know, we're asked questions, and, you know, we're not allowed to answer these questions. When we're talking to a third party, who are you? What's this about? Where are you calling from? Is this about money? Do they owe you money? Is this about a bill? Are you a bill collector? You know, how do we answer those questions? You know, legally, we can't say, yes, it's about a bill. Yet we know that if we don't answer this person's question to their satisfaction, we're not going to get any information out of them. So we're going to learn today how to answer questions and learn how to motivate minds. And not only their mind, but your mind also. You know, I want to give you an example, and we see it on the next slide. And this is something that when we're calling, if someone called you, we call it the name game, you know, and it's a very good classic example of how neurolinguistics affects you, how words affect you. One simple question: who would you give the most information to? If I called you and identified myself as Mr. Brown, or this is Ron, or this is Ronnie, who are you going to give the most information to? Most people will say in the face-to-face seminars, well, we'll give more information to Ronnie. Well, do you know why? Remember what I told you at the beginning. Why is very important. Let's learn why. Why would you give more information to Ronnie? And we track this as professional tracers. And our company, CSI, and the members of my Eagle Group 20, you know, I would tell you these are probably the best tracers in the United States of America, maybe the world. They find people that other people can't find. How do they do it? Part of it is right here. We have found through studies that if a person calling's name ends in IE or Y, they will get more information. They identify themselves by their first name, and the first name ends in I or Y. Mary, Bobby, Judy, Billy, any name that ends in I or Y. Why? The next slide, we see why. Because, you know, who offers the least threat? Mr. Brown, Ron, or Ronnie? Ronnie is a young person. And you notice my voice even changes as I say that. Mr. Brown, Ron, or Ronnie? You know, Ronnie is young. Ronnie is a young person. He's non-threatening. You know, I've always liked words. You notice that's my high school annual picture there. And my comment was, I wish I'd said that. Everybody had all these great quotations. You know, I didn't have one, so I wish I'd said what they said. But you can see there, this is a classic example of neurolinguistics. Every time you hear someone's name, your brain creates a word picture of what that person looks like. Have you ever talked to someone on the phone and you develop a word picture of what they look like, and then when you meet them, they look absolutely nothing like what you thought? Your mind developed that word picture. You can't control it. It does it. It does it on past experiences. You just automatically develop the word picture. So, you know, where are these things stored? Where do we get this information? On the next slide, and this is very important that you understand this, it's a little area called the monkey brain. If you look at that diagram of the brain, the little blue, light blue area, the occipital lobe, they call it the monkey brain because it's about the size of a monkey's brain. And that's where all automatic reflexes are stored. And automatic reflexes are very important when you're talking about neurolinguistics. If you look at it, you know, have you ever driven, you know, said yes to something? Somebody comes up and you're busy doing something and they say, can I do this or can I do that? Or will you do this or will you do that? And you say, oh yeah, okay. And then just seconds later, you think, why did I say that? Why did I agree to do that? You know, why? We're going to know why before this is over. Why you agreed, why you said yes. Have you ever driven from point A to point B and not remembered driving there? I mean, all of a sudden you're at work or all of a sudden you, and you don't actually remember driving there. That's pretty serious, going from point A to point B. These are involuntary reflexes, automatic reflexes. They're controlled by that part of the brain, the monkey brain. Now, the last thing here I want to show you, and if anybody disagrees with me, raise your hand, tell Mike. If you don't breathe, you're going to die. Everybody agree with that. But you don't think, I got to breathe in, I got to breathe out, I got to breathe in, I got to breathe out. No, it's automatic reflex. There's a demonstration I do when I'm doing face-to-face seminars. And by the way, this is about a four-hour seminar. The neurolinguistics in collections, neurolinguistics in tracing, each are about 4 hours. So we're condensing 4 hours into 1 hour. But a demonstration I do on the face-to-face is I will select a person from the audience who has their legs crossed. And I will tell everyone to watch them very closely. And I'll say, will you please stand up? And they'll uncross their legs and stand up. And then I will ask each person, tell me the first thing they did when I asked them to stand up. They'll tell you everything, but uncross their legs. And I'll have them do it again. Watch them very closely. If they cross their legs back, if not, I'll select someone else, and you can try this with their legs crossed, and I'll ask them to stand up and say, now, what was the first thing that person did? They'll tell you all these different things, but they won't say they uncrossed their legs. And then I will actually ask the person, tell the people, what's the first thing you did? And they'll say everything, but I uncrossed my legs. And then I'll tell them, leave your legs in the position they're in right now and try to stand up. And then everyone realizes that is a involuntary reflex. You know that you can't stand up without uncrossing your legs. And it's really odd. People don't see you do that. They don't see that. It's odd how the brain works. The monkey brain, we got to remember that because we're going to talk about power words and these five very, very powerful words in the English language, and it all comes from the monkey brain. So what are these words? What are the words? Five of the most powerful words in the English language, five neurolinguistic words that we're going to learn to use today. And I will tell you, when you leave this session, you're going to be empowered with knowledge that the normal person walking down the street doesn't have. Neurolinguistics can literally be a life-changing thing when you start studying it, when you understand it. And we're going to look at these words. We're going to see the word no. And I want you to notice something. After the word no, there's a period. No, that's the end of it. You know, why? And there's a question mark. Because we have three dots. There's more to come. Because help with an exclamation mark and really. And you notice I haven't put anything after really. We're going to talk about that as we go on. Let's look at the first word. Let's look at the word no. Let me tell you about the word no. On the next slide, we will see where no comes from. First of all, I will tell you without any hesitation, without any mental reservation, that is the first word that ever had meaning to you as a small child. Your parents said it to you. That's the word that a small child hears more than any other word. If you have, any of you out there have small children, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And it's really strange because it doesn't just come out, no. It comes out in threes. It comes out loud and usually in a harsh tone. No, no, no. No, no, no. No, no, no. Now, keep in mind, that word becomes stored in the monkey brain, the word no. We develop a fear of the word no. It reaches a point we don't want to hear it and we don't want to say it. Why did you say yes when the person came up and asked you a question? Came out of the monkey brain. Monkey brain loves to say yes. Monkey brain loves to tell the truth. There is a movie, an old movie called The French Connection with Gene Hackman. And when they're interrogating people, there's a technique that they use. They will ask, have you ever been to Poughkeepsie? Do you scratch between your toes? And then they ask the question they want the answer to. Why do they do that? What does it mean? It's like me telling you, you know, you can soak a potato in water all day long and a hammer will still break glass. Got that? You can soak a potato in water all day long and a hammer still breaks glass. Now, what's the correlation? What does it mean? Absolutely nothing. But your brain immediately starts trying to figure out what the correlation is. What does soaking a potato in water have to do with a hammer breaking glass? If at that period, I have engaged the left and the right frontal lobes of your brain. If I ask you a question, 99% of the time, the answer will come from the monkey brain, and it will be the truth, or it'll be the word yes. Remember, monkey brain loves yes, hates the word no. Blame it on your parents. They screamed it at you. Don't want to hear it. Don't want to say it. So we get a yes or no. That's why when you're busy doing something, and somebody comes up and asks you, can I do this? Can I do that? Will you do this? Will you do that? And you say, yes. That was that automatic reflex coming out of the monkey brain. That's where it comes from. Now, we use this in tracing because just as much as you don't like to hear the word no or say the word no, the person you're talking to, the third party, the informant, they don't want to say no. They like to say yes. I'm going to give you a very, very advanced neurological technique right now, a very advanced neurolinguistic technique. When we're skip tracing and we're calling someone, could be the sister, could be the parents or whatever, no matter who answers the phone, and let's say I'm looking for Mike Gibb, you know, and I call, I don't care whether a man answers the phone or a woman answers the phone, the first word out of my mouth is going to be one word, Mike. And how does the person have to respond? With the word no, the word they don't like. Well, and now understand something. I ask them questions that I know they have to answer no to. Well, this is Mike's number, isn't it? No. Well, Mike lives there, doesn't he? No. I have made them say no three times. There is power in threes. Don't ask me why. Maybe it's because your parents screamed it at you in threes. But I have made them say no three times. Mike, no. This is Mike's number, isn't it? No. Mike lives there, doesn't he? No. Well, how can I reach him? At that point, their brain is begging to give me a positive. It wants to say yes to something. Nothing is 100%. Nothing I can tell you will work 100% of the time. There's nothing in the skip tracing industry that's 100%. I take that back. There is one thing that is 100%, and that's that nothing is 100%. That I can tell you. So, you know, I can't guarantee this works every time, but it will work more times than it won't work. No matter who answers, just call the person with the name, make them say no three times, ask them three questions you're going to get a no to, and then ask the question you want the answer to. The brain is begging to tell the truth. The brain is begging to give you a positive at that point. So chances are they're going to tell you how to get in touch with Mike. Well, how can I reach him? Now, in skip tracing, if we're collecting money, we're only allowed to ask for three things: resident's address, the resident's phone number, or the place of employment. Can't ask for the employment phone number. But they may give you, you know, if you're calling at 12 o'clock noon, what number can I reach them at? What number are they usually going to give you where they work? You don't ask them for it, the law against them giving it to you. So we want to understand, as we overcome the fear of the word no, we miss many opportunities because we fear somebody will tell us no. Don't fear the word no. Don't not ask the question because you're afraid you're going to get a negative or a no. Embrace the word no, knowing that the other person wants to give you a positive or wants to give you a yes. They want to give you the truth. The monkey brain loves to tell the truth. Keep that in mind. One of the most powerful words in the English language, no. Now look at the next word. Why? Why? Why is an extremely powerful word too? Why is a question? And, you know, think about this. We are taught from a very early age that we are supposed to answer questions. From the time our parents first ask us, what are you doing? Where are you? What are you doing? We're supposed to answer. Read my lips. I ask you a question. Answer me. Think about it. Tests that we get in school from grade school until we graduate from a higher learning place, we get rewarded for answering questions. That's all a test is. A test is just questions, and we're rewarded for answering it. We get to feel good when we make 100 on a test and we answer all the questions correctly. We develop a natural response pattern to answer any question asked. Now, under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the only question that you have to answer, and I'm not telling you don't answer questions, but I'm telling you be empowered with the knowledge, the only question you have to answer when talking to a third party is, who do you work for? You must give them the legal identity of the company that you work for. So, there's a big thing about why also. We think we have to answer questions. We don't. When we ask a question, we expect to get an answer. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But we have to learn that when we ask a question, stop and listen to the answer. I could ask all of you, and in a face-to-face program I do, ask how many of you, have ever asked somebody a question and they answer, and 2 or 3 minutes later, you forgot how they answered. You have to ask them the question again. This was brought up to me by my partner that I ride with. He asked me one day, when we go somewhere, why do you ask me 4 times where we're going? And I stopped to think, why do I do that? Do I do it? Why do I do it? And I figured out, when the first time I say, where are we going? And he gave me an address, 2519 Northwest 23rd Street. My mind only picked up on the, I only heard the Northwest. I had the Northwest 23rd. I get on 23rd and I'll ask him again, where are we going? 2519 Northwest 23rd. I head to the 2500 block. I get there and I ask him again, where are we going? 2519. I have learned that when I ask him where we're going, I have to disengage my brain and listen to the complete answer. 2519 Northwest 23rd. And then I repeat that to myself. So when you ask a consumer, a third party, a question, remember, disengage your brain and listen to the entire answer. Now, I'm going to tell you another very advanced neurolinguistic technique that you do not have to answer questions. You'll never have to answer another question as long as you live in your whole life if you don't want to. if you follow this technique. Now, with neurolinguistics, it's very important that you learn the technique, not just how, but why. The technique. Is this about a bill? Are you a bill collector? Are they in trouble? These are things we hear when we're talking to a third party. Why do you want to get in touch with them? Well, let's take the first one. Is this about a bill? Step number one, and write this down because you've got to follow these steps exactly if it's going to work for you. Step number one, repeat the question exactly as they answered it. Ask it. Is this about a bill? Then hesitate to the count of three. And, you know, here in Oklahoma, it's cowboy country. So we do the one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. And then you say, that's a very, and you can use the word strange, unusual, or odd. I mean, do any of you want to be strange, unusual, or odd? Most people don't. So you can say, that's a very strange question. Why would you ask me that? Remember, repeat the question. Is this about a bill? Hesitate to three. That's a very strange question. Why would you ask me that? Now, they don't know what you know. You know you don't have to answer questions. They don't know that. They will answer your question. Well, I know a lot of bill collectors have been calling them. Are you a bill collector? Am I a bill collector? That's a very odd question. Why would you ask me that? Well, because I know they're not paying their bills, and I know they've been called the bill collectors. And you gain information, and you gave away absolutely nothing, and they don't realize it. They don't realize it. I testify a lot as an expert witness, and it's really odd. In depositions, I can have an attorney ask me a question. I can answer the question just like that, you know, repeat his question. Why did I put that in my interrogatory? That's an odd question. Why are you even asking me that? And they will tell you, and then they will move right on to their next question. They just don't realize it. Why is a very powerful word. Questions are very important. Learn how not to answer the ones you don't want to answer and not even let the people realize you didn't answer it. And learn to listen to the entire answer they give you. Know why. The next one word we want to look at is the word because. Now, I asked the people to define because. Webster defines because as a reason that, for the reason that. There's no clear definition. Because standalone means absolutely nothing, yet we learn to accept that. It's embedded in our brains, and again, blame it on your parents. Because I said so, and that's all you need to know, because that's the way it is. Just because, you know, people who study neurolinguistics will tell you that if you start a sentence with the word because, you stand up to a 30 or 35% better chance of getting what you want. Because, hesitate, let those enzymes work in the brain, learn to hesitate, because. It's very important I get in touch with them today. Do you have a number I can reach them? Because I know you want what's best for them. It's very important that you give me the information that I can get in touch with them. Learn to use that word because. 35% better chance. You know, if there's any women out there, I'm sure at one time or another you've gone in, your husband's reading the paper, watching television, and you ask him to take the trash out. He says, I'll do it at intermission. I'll do it at the commercial. Commercial comes along. Does he take the trash out? Nope. Nope. You know, number one, he can't read the paper and watch television at the same time. The human brain won't do that. Men cannot multitask. Women can. Women are multitaskers. Men are not. So, you know, number one, he's not multitasking to begin with. But if you will learn to start the sentence with the word because, honey, because, let the enzymes work, the trash needs to be taken out. Will you do it? You got a 30, 35% better chance. Because I need a new dress, give me $100 or $200, 35% better chance. You know, 30, 35% is not a lot, but when you're skip tracing, and it's important you find people. What if you could find 30 to 35% more of the people you're looking for? Then it becomes a big figure. No, why? Because. Now, we play a game in our office. If you don't use these words, you'll lose these words. So anytime anybody comes up and asks someone a question, they're very careful, first of all, not to respond with a yes. They think about it. Learn to do that. When someone asks you a question, disengage, think about what the question was, decide what you want to answer. Anytime anyone in our office gives someone a no, we come back with why or why not. You know, when someone won't give you information, I'm not going to tell you how to reach him. The only word you want to use is why. Well, why not? And remember, they think they have to answer, so they're going to tell you why or why not. And once again, you've gained information. When someone says why to someone in our office, they'll answer because. That's all, just because. And when they answer because, the other person is trained to say, because is not a reason. I need to know the real reason. Because why? Play that game. Know why, because. Know why, because. It works out real good. You use the words, you get used to them. Now, we come to the next very, very important word. And that word is help. You know, there's a Freudian, what's called the pleasure principle. And the theory is that we do things because they make us feel good. You know, you're driving down the road and you see someone stop, they got a flat tire, you stop, you get out, you help them. When you drive away, you feel real good. You see these people out there will work for food. You know, they won't work. I've tried to get them to work. They don't work. They're just out there panhandling. But you'll see people giving them money. Why are they giving them that money? Because it makes them feel good. They have helped someone. Everybody feels good when they can help another person. Learn to let people feel good. That's all I want to do when I'm skip tracing. I was told you are probably the only person that can help me. I need your help. It appeals to the ego. It allows the person to feel important. It's a very important word for tracers to have in the vocabulary. And again, I never fear the word no. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Somebody tells you no, you ask them a question. But I have gotten so much information. My partner that I ride with, he's a retired police officer, 24 years of police department. He's very, very negative about a lot of things. And, you know, we went into a post office a while back and we were trying to find the directions to a route box. And before we went in, he told me, they're not going to give you information. They won't give you the information. We've come in as uniformed police officers. They won't give us the information. I went in, I asked to speak to the postmaster. The gentleman came up. I told him who I was. I told him, you know, could he give me the address and the directions to a certain address? He goes back and brings a big map out, opens it up, shows us exactly how to get there. You know, I told him, I was told that you could help me. Now, why did he give me the information? Because first of all, and once again, I'm going to teach you a very advanced technique, neurolinguistic technique. If you want information from a post office in a small town, and I went in the post office that day because I was there, but this works when you're calling, never call the post office. The first thing you do is call the police department or the sheriff's office if they don't have a police department in that town. In Oklahoma, there's a lot of small towns that don't have police departments. The sheriff's office takes care of it from the county. First thing you do when you call is you ask for the chief of police or you ask for the sheriff. Start at the top. Usually you won't get them, you'll get an assistant, but what they're told is there's someone calling for the chief or there's someone calling for the sheriff. They don't know what your connection is. I never lie, I never cheat when I'm skip tracing. I tell people the truth. My name is Ron Brown. I'm trying to locate a John Doe in your area. He has a post office box there. Do you by any chance know him? Now, every now and then you'll get a, oh yeah, we know him. We know the whole family, the brothers, the sisters. When you get that, you're going to get all the information. They'll tell you everything they know. But normally what you get is a no, I don't think I know him. Then you say, well, they've got a post office box there. Do you think the post office might be able to help me, the postmaster? What do people love to say? We're empowered. We know they want to say yes. They're not going to tell you no. They won't help you. They'll tell you yes. They'll probably help you. Then you ask, by any chance, do you know the postmaster's name? And small town, they're going to know who the postmaster is. They will give you the postmaster's name. Yes, it's Mary Jones. You by any chance have their number. At this point, they just want to get you off the phone. They will look the phone number up for you in the telephone directory. Now you're ready to call the post office. You call, may I speak to Mary Jones? Mary, I just talked to the chief of police. He gave me your name and number and told me you probably could help me. 99% of the time, they will give you all the information, because what you're doing is you're changing perception. It's not you asking for the information. It's the police chief or the sheriff asking for the information. Now, that's not what you said, but the perception becomes the reality. You have changed reality, and you'll get the information that way. It not only works with the post office, it'll work with any business in town. Is there a local pharmacy? Do you know the pharmacist's name? You know, if you think the people, and most people take some type of medicine, a grocery store, a service station, you know, a lot of these small towns only have one or two service stations. Do you know the owner's name? Do you have their number? The key thing is that you can call the person by name, and you can state that you just talked to either the sheriff or the undersheriff or the police chief or the assistant chief or whoever. Get the name of the person you talked to, and then you say, they gave me your name and number and told me that you probably could help me. Our word, help. And that's one way that you can use it to get information. By the way, I won't work in a big city. I won't work in a big post office because they don't know people, but there is a federal form that you can use. It's available to get information regarding a post office box. I have the form. If anyone wants it, I'll be happy to send it to you. Goes to the postmaster. A person can't hide behind a post office box to divert legal service. So they will give you the physical address of the box holder. And no problem. It'll ask you for a case number. You just put pending. You got to serve them where you can get a case number or file. That's all you have to do. So no, why, because, help. Now we come to the final power word, really. What does really mean? You notice after really, I put a period. It can be period. That's it, really. It can have a question mark, really. It can be asking for more information, really. Or it can have the exclamation mark, really. The word really, really has no clear meaning, and therefore the interpretation is based totally on the hearer's understanding at that given moment. It's a great de-escalation word. I'll never tell you where they are. You'll never find me, really. You're never going to find them, really. I'm not giving you any information, really. Great de-escalation word. It can diffuse many, many potential volatile situations. It causes the hearer to pause and digest the direction of the conversation based on how the word's being used. Again, and you know, it's on their interpretation. Is it a question? Really? I don't know his number. Really? I don't know where he lives. Really? You know, it's a very powerful word, and it just goes right on. We use it going back to, you know, am I a bill collector? That's a very strange question. Why would you ask me that? Well, I know a lot of people are calling about bills, you know, and that you use the word right here, really. And then silence. Silence can be deafening. And they will give you more information. Really. So we know the five powerful words. No, why, because, help, and really. Now, let's see how we use those words to motivate people to give us information. Let's use that knowledge, motivating informants to provide information to us. How do we do it? The first thing we have to understand is the steps of a tracing call. In a tracing call, similar to the eight steps of a collection call, number one, identify your informant. Know who you're talking to. Know what information that person should be able to give you before you talk to them. And then identify yourself. Now, remember, you have a very powerful tool right here, how you identify yourself. You're going to create a word picture of who you are. You can be, this is Mr. Brown. I'm trying to locate your brother, John Gibb, regarding a business matter. Word picture. Or you can be, this is Ron. I'm trying to get in touch with your brother, Bob, on a business matter. Or this is Ronnie. And you notice that the voice changes. This is Ronnie, and I'm trying to get in touch with your brother. You decide what you want to be and who you want to be. You know, state the purpose of your call, pause, find a common ground, extract the desired information, close your call, and update your file. Know those steps. And, you know, I have tracers write these off and put them on their CRT, on their computer, so they know this is a roadmap to success right here. So they know where they are in relation to. Identify the informant, identify yourself, state the purpose of your call, pause, find the common ground, extract the desired information, close the call, update your file. They know exactly where they are at any given point in time. Let's look individually at these steps. We started looking at number one, identify your informant. You know, we call this a fishing technique. We want to dangle the worm and then we want to catch them. We see on the next slide the fishing technique. This is where we use this word no. We use the power of the word no here. Again, I'm calling Mike's sister Mary, and Mary answers the phone, and I'll say, Mike, no. This is Mike's number, isn't it? No. Well, Mike lives here, doesn't he? No. Well, how can I reach him? At that point, remember, she is begging to give me information. But once I get that, you know who you're talking to. Know who the person is. Identify the person on the other end of the line. The next step, identify yourself. And like I say, these are the two steps we covered. What are you going to look like? We see on the next slide. Who are you going to be? You know, there was a old television show I used to watch when I was a kid, Tom Terrific. And he always said, I can be who I want to be. So can I. I can be Tom Terrific. I can be Mr. Brown. I can be Ron. I can be Ronnie. It's up to you how you want to do that. The next part becomes very important. We see on the next slide, state the purpose and ask for location information. Remember the definition of location information. I don't want you breaking the law here. You know, under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, you can ask for and only ask for the resident's address, the resident's phone number, and the place of employment. You can't ask, well, what's their phone number at work? You know, they work at a Walmart, and there's 7 Walmarts in that city. You're going to have to call each one. You can't ask them what the number is. But, again, we train our tracers to never, ever ask for a home number. They'll never say, well, do you have the home number? They'll never say, do you have the work number? They'll say, is there a number I can reach them? Do you have a number I can reach them? What number can I reach them at? So consequently, you're not asking for the work number, but again, if it's in the daytime, usually the number you can reach them at that point in time will be their work number, and you get the work number. You didn't ask for it. You never asked for the home number, whatever. And remember, though, if you go beyond that, you're really violating the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which as a collector, you don't want to do. I've had people say, well, I'm a private investigator, and I don't have to do that. If it is in relation to the end result of collecting money, no matter who you are or what you are, you have to follow the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Like I told you before, when you talk to a third party, know what you want. Know ahead of time what you want from that person. Know how to get it. Know what you want. Know how to get it. Positive mental attitude. Extract the whys and the circumstances. You know, why do you think they left? Learn to use open-end questions. Closed-end questions can be answered yes or no. Open-end, they've got to think about it. They've got to give you their opinion. They've got to give you the answer. So get that from them. You know, why did they move? You know, well, I know he's been off work. He's been sick. Well, you know, if I'm looking for an asset, an automobile, you know, I may get, well, you know, do they still drive that, all that white Ford? Oh, no, it was in an accident. Oh, I've been trying to get the hold of this guy for 3 weeks and nobody ever answers. That's because he died. Or maybe they're deployed to military service. Maybe they're out of work. Find out what the circumstances are. The Matthias dynamis, through knowledge, power. The more knowledge you have prior to talking to a consumer to try to collect a debt, the more information you have, the more knowledge you have, the more powerful it's going to be, the easier it's going to be to collect that money. You know, another important part of this, after you state the purpose and you ask that location information, learn to pause. Breathe. We see on the next slide, a professional tracer listens. They learn to not only hear, but to listen. And this is one of the biggest things that I find a problem that tracers have. They hear, but they don't listen. Hearing is accident. We hear everything. It's accidental. It's involuntary. We don't have to do anything to hear. It's an effortless thing on our part. But listening, disengage the brain when you ask a question and listen. Be focused. It's a voluntary thing. I'm going to listen to every single word that this person says in order to get the answers. It's intentional. Remember that part right there. Hearing is accidental, involuntary, effortless. Listening is completely different. It's focused. It's voluntary. It's intentional. Now, you know, if I'm talking to you face to face, if I'm teaching a class, I can look at you and I get that nod. I love it when I get the nod. The affirmation that, yes, what I'm saying is right, and you're agreeing with me. Telephonically, when you're talking to an informant, you can't get that. You know, and they don't know whether you're listening to them or not. So learn to let them know you're listening by just a simple, Every now and then, make a little noise. Let them know you're on the line so you don't get that, hello, are you there? Are you there? Thing. The difference between hearing and listening. A professional tracer listens. A skip guesser hears, but they don't listen. Next slide, we see, you know, why is important here. Why? You know, how hard is this person going to be to find? Why are they running? It may not be debt. It could be, you know, a lot of times we see a divorce. They don't want to pay child support. A lot of times it's the fact that, you know, they've got outstanding warrants on them. You know, I'm looking for a gentleman right now. And I mean, he's got 5 outstanding warrants here. If he's found, he's going to end up going to jail. But why is he running? You know, divorce, is it debt? Do they owe a lot of money? Or, you know, there's people who, that's just the way they're brought up. They're brought up, they're credit criminals. Know when to hold them, know when to fold them. When you see you're looking for one of those type people, you know, get out of it as quick as you can. Just get out of it. So discover the why. Find out why the people are running. When you're talking to the informants, get as much information as you can. And a simple way of doing that is just saying, well, you know, why do you think they left? Where do you think they went? Now I'm going to teach you another advanced neurolinguistic technique right here, because many times we'll get, well, you know, I don't know when they left. They left sometime a while back. And where'd they go? I don't know. They went somewhere, you know, went somewhere out west. Use dates. Did they leave before or after Thanksgiving? It's odd. They don't know when they left, but when you use a date like that, well, it was before Thanksgiving. They can remember that. Before Thanksgiving. Was it before or after Labor Day? It was after Labor Day. They can remember back the people were here on Labor Day. You are manipulating their mind. You're extracting information that the ordinary person cannot get from them. By using dates, significant dates. So now you know they left between Labor Day and Thanksgiving. Somewhere in that period of time is when they left. So now you know how cold the spore is when you want to hunt them. You say they went out west. Did they go, you know, far west, northwest, southwest? What part out west did they go to? Ask them that. I think it was southwest. You'll get that from them. Southwest, okay. Southwest, you talking Arizona, New Mexico, Well, you know, I think he said it was Utah. Oh, okay. You know what city in Utah? And surprisingly, when you're finished with that person, you will have extracted a lot of information out of them that you normally wouldn't have got. Learn to do that. Learn to do it. And basically, that is solving your problem, trying to find the people. And we see on the next slide, the solve the problem thing. Make the informant feel important. Make them feel like, you know, that they're important. Take your time, gather facts, get the knowledge. Remember the Matthias Dynamis, what I told you earlier, knowledge is power. When they left, why they left, and where they went. That's what the skip tracer is looking for. When, why, where. You know, to track somebody, you always start by going backwards. When and where is the last time you knew absolutely where these people were? Then you work forward from that, but you go backwards to go forward. That's what a good tracer does. Now, the final thing is you want to close your call. In closing the call, there's another technique I'm going to teach you. The Fair Debt Collection Practices Act says that once you've made contact with an informant, you're not allowed to contact them again unless you have reason to believe they have new information or you have reason to believe that they gave you false information or within a reasonable amount of time. Courts have kind of looked at 90 days. In other words, if I'm contacting Mike trying to find his sister Mary, about once every 90 days, I could probably call him and get by with it because I would have reason to believe that possibly in 90 days that he might have some new information. But, you know, I don't want to wait 90 days to contact him. So how can I do it? The third reason is with the consumer's permission, with the third party's permission. So when you close a call, always thank the person. Thank them. Whether they gave you information or they didn't give you any information, every call you end up being a winner or a loser. A winner or a loser. If you got information, you won. If you feel good when the call's over, you won. If you don't, you lost. We want to keep that nose-up attitude, so we're going to win every call. You didn't give me any information, Mike. You gave me absolutely nothing. You're one of them oh-nos. We have those. We have oh-nos and oh-cares in Oklahoma. You know, where'd they go? You know, where'd they go? Oh-no. When did he leave? Oh-no. Mike was an oh-no. He gave me absolutely nothing. I'm going to close that call. Bye. Mike, thank you so much. You gave me exactly the information I needed. Hey, you have a very nice day and Merry Christmas. And I'm going to terminate the call. Now, let me tell you, I won that call. You know why? Because I ruined his day. He's going to go all day long. What does he mean? I didn't tell him nothing, but he said I gave him exactly the information I needed. You know, if he gave me the information, I'm going to thank him. I'm going to thank him if he gave me the information. So consequently, whether he gives it to me or he doesn't give it to me, I'm going to close every call the same way. Thank you so much. You gave me exactly the information I needed. Now, if he didn't give me the information, what happens? His brain is trying to coordinate. Well, what did I tell him? I didn't tell him anything. At that point, I will say, is it okay if I check back with you next month? Is it okay if I check back with you next week? But what am I going to get? Chances are I'll get a yes because it's going to come out of the monkey brain. He's trying to figure out in his brain what he told me that you know, he didn't tell me anything. What did I tell him? You know, so I ask him the question and I get a yes. Now I have permission to call him back. I obtain their permission because there will be a next time. Get the permission to call him back, and that's the way you do it. Update your file, put the information in there, who you talked to, when you talked to them, what information they gave you. You know, tracing is a fun part of the collection industry. We are all natural born hunters. We are born with a hunter instinct. Some people develop it stronger than others as time goes by. You know, you go out shopping, that's a hunt. You know, we hunt every day of our life. So the brain, the human brain, and we see on the next slide, always remember the greatest tool you have. The greatest tool a tracer has is their mind. We have the ability to reason. No other animal, no other fish, no other fowl on the face of the earth can reason. They run out of pure fright. they do things out of just instinct, but we can reason. We can reason. You know, I think they're going to do this, but no, they probably think, I think they're going to do this, so they're going to do that. We have the ability to reason. We have the ability to understand why. Why does this work this time? Why does it work on this person? Why do I do it this particular way? We have the ability to counter move, to go backwards, to see where we start, and then to get in front of them and to catch them. And the greatest of all, we have the ability to multitask and use all these abilities at the same time. Human mind, the greatest tool we have, the greatest tool a skip tracer can possess. Mike, did we have any questions as we went along? We're approaching the top of the hour. Okay.
We do have some questions. And if anybody, we have a couple minutes left. So if anybody does have a question, now would be the best time to type it in and shoot it over so we can try and get to it before the webinar is over. But here's our first question is, how does your technique change based off stating you are recording the call, i.e. saying this call may be recorded?
You know, I wouldn't change my technique at all. You know, it's like when you talk to a consumer and you have to Mirandize them. I've had some people tell me the moment we Mirandize, they hang the phone up on us. You know, when you're actually talking to the consumer about a debt. And I taught them the technique to get their attention. And that's the first thing you got to do. Identify the consumer, identify yourself, and then state, you know, this is an attempt to collect a debt under federal law. I must advise you. Anything you say can be used. You know, you get their attention with that. Learn how to do it. You know, we don't record, so we don't have that problem. I would just put it in there. Hey, you know, this is Ronnie, and I'm trying to get in touch with your brother, Bob. By the way, this call might be recorded, and I'd move right on. That's the way I would do it. I wouldn't make a big issue out of it. And if they say, well, why are you recording this call? You know how to answer that, don't you? Why am I recording this call? Well, that's an odd question. Why would you ask me that? Move right on. Really? Another question, Mike.
Yes. We got time for one more question here before we wrap up. And there's a tremendous amount of great information in here. How would you recommend somebody who's never really taken this approach start? You know, what would be the first steps to trying to sort of implement this process or, you know, this sort of neuro-linguistics into their operation?
I would tell you to play a game we play called Ring Ring. I take an experienced tracer and I put them with the trainee and we role play. We make the call and we practice. If you want to be a professional in anything, a professional football player during season he plays a game one day a week. What does he do the other 6 days? He practices and practice with each other. Practice with a skilled skip tracer. Learn the techniques. Share the techniques. That's the best way to do it. There's nothing better than working with somebody who knows what they're doing and just integrate it in. For every move, there's a counter move. For every question, there's a counter question.
Well, excellent. I'm sure we've got Ron's contact information up there. So if anybody wants to get in touch with Ron to get his help on this, I'm sure he'd make himself available as well. Well, that we've run out of time. We've reached the top of the hour. But before I let everybody go, Ron, that was incredibly comprehensive and really appreciate you taking the time to walk us through this really interesting topic. I wanted to also want to thank MicroBuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.microbuilt.com to learn more about the company. I'm going to talk to Ron, and we're going to see if we can't get him back to talk with the second part of his presentation, either maybe in the new year, but really appreciate him taking the time. Thanks to everybody who listened and participated today. Thanks to everyone who asked questions. Ron, really appreciate your time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mike, and everyone. Good luck. Good hunting.
Thanks, everybody. Take care.